We're holding on Pezayin Omer Beis, the second line of the wide lines. We're in the middle of as follows. We were talking about the din of Zaken Mamre, a distinguished Talmid Chacham who disagrees with the national Sanhedrin, and for that he can be Chayiv Misa. And we said, according to the mayor, in order for him to be Chayiv for that, it would have to be that he's arguing with the Sanhedrin on something which involves, on some issue that would involve something that if it was done b'mezid, a person would be Chayiv Kardes, and if he does it b'shoigig, then he has to bring a Chatas. Of which there are 36 or 43 such mitzvahs, depending on how you count them, basically, whether you break certain ones down into other ones. So now we had brought a long braisa that gave a list of areas in halacha where the Zaken Mamre and the Sanhedrin might conceivably be arguing, and we said each of those, we learned from a phrase in the pasuk that he could be a Zaken Mamre for it. So now we were trying to explain, according to the mayor, how each one of those things ends up resulting in something that involves kares and chatas. For example, is if they argue about the time of year during which you can declare a leap year. So how would that involve? Kares is because, depending on their argument, is when Pesach is going to be, and Pesach, a person eats chametz on Pesach, is chayav kares. And we were going through systematically like that, each thing mentioned in the Braisa, where either the thing itself involves kares, such as if they're arguing on dinim and hilchos nidah or something, or where it's something that will bring to something, which can bring to something, etc., which eventually winds up to something which is kares and achatas, for example, where they argue on something which winds up in dinim mominus, so therefore it involves in the question, is money changing hands over here? Is money that's in somebody's possession, does it validly belong to him, and therefore can he use it for Kiddushin? If he can use it for Kiddushin, then it means that now the woman that he's Makadish is an Eshes Ish, and therefore there's Kares involved if she commits adultery, etc. So, the Gemara continues, Nigei Batim, where do we have an example involving Tzaras of houses, which was one of the things mentioned in that Braisa, where they could be arguing that would lead to something that's Kares. So, for example, Beplugta, Rav Elazar, Rav Shimon, Rav Banan. Let's say they could be arguing at the same machloitas that we later on find Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon and the other Chachamim arguing about. Ditnan, we learn in a Mishnah. Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon Omer, Lo olam ein abayis tomei, a house can never become tomei with tzaras, even if it otherwise meets all the other criteria. Unless you can see that the tzaras spot is the size of at least two grisin. A gris is a type of bean. It comes up in Hilchos Nida, among other things. The poskim nowadays have an argument what the size of it is, ranging anywhere from approximately the size of a dime to approximately the size of a penny, or give or take a little direction, a little bit in either direction. So he says the tzaras spot has to be at least the size of two grisin. Al shtei avonim, it has to be on two stones. It's a part of the spot on one stone and pour it on the other. The shneik solim, those two stones have to be on two different walls, two different adjacent walls. The keren zavis in a corner. The minimum length of the spot has to be at least two grisin, and the width of it has to be at least one gris. Now, the point is, it's very unlikely that that's good. Earlier in the Masechta, we learned this as well. It's very unlikely that you're going to have a tzaras spot in exactly that position and exactly that minimum size, etc. And therefore, in short, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, it's very unlikely that a house is ever going to become tamei with tzaras in the first place. And the Gemara points out, my time, Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, why does Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon say that? Because he says, k'siv kir, uchtiv kir rois. Because the pasuk mentions that you find the tzaras on the wall in the singular, but then it says the kir rois, on the walls plural. So he says, Ezehu kir shul kakiros, which wall is like two walls, heavyem is a keren zavis, you have to say a corner, and therefore he says it has to be part of it on one side, and the other on the other wall, and then the other on the other side. Now the point is, let's say, for example, that you have a house which has a tzaras spot not in that exact configuration. Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon would say that it's not tzaras. The Chachamim would say that it is. Now, let's say a person goes into that house, which a house with tzaras makes a person tamei when he goes into it. He becomes tamei immediately. His clothes become tamei if he stays a certain minimum amount of time in there. So now, let's say he does that. He goes in there, and according to the Chachamim, he'll be tamei. And according to Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, he will not. If now, later on, he goes into the Bais Mikdash, is he going to be chayav kares or not? According to the Chachamim, yes. According to Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, no. So there you go. There you have a machlokes that can involve something involving kares. Okay. Nigei begodim, where do we have something involving tzaras of clothing? What would be an example of a machlokes that could lead to something that's chayav kares? So we plugged her, did Rav Yonis and Menav Tumus, Verabonon. Rav Yonis, and it says over here on the side, it should really say Rav Nosson, whatever. There's a machloikas of Rav Yonis or Rav Nosson, Ben Av Tumus, and the Chachamim. D'tanya, we learn in a braisa, Rav Yonis or Rav Nosson, Ben Av Tumus, Omer, Minayim l'pricha b'begodim shehi tahoira. How do we know, he says, that if a piece of clothing becomes entirely covered with saras, that it's tahor? Now, we know that's the case by a person. A person comes to the Kohen originally with a spot of saras, and he's going to be tamei, and then the saras spreads and covers his whole body, then the Torah tells us he's tahor. So now, how do we know the same thing is true as far as clothing? So he says, Nemer karachas v'gabachas ba'odam, because the Pasuk says, by a person, it uses the word karachas and gabachas. The context over there, it's talking about when a person goes bald in the back of his head or the front of his head. So first it says that the falling of the hair itself is not considered that it doesn't make him tame, it just means that he's going bald because of old age or whatever. But then the Pasuk describes that if on that bald area of his head, now there appears tzaras of the kind that you find that you could find elsewhere on the body, white or pink, etc., then he'll be tamei. So it uses the word karachas and gabachas over there. Gabachas means the front of the head, karachas means the back of the head. I had a fourth grade Rebbe who gave us a very funny way of remembering which is which. He said the letter gimel is close to the front of the aleph bays, the letter kuf is close to the back. Therefore, that helps you remember that gabachas is in the front of the head and karachas is in the back. Anyway, so it uses those words by a person. V'nema karachas v'gabachas v'godim. By taras of clothing, it also says karachas and gabachas. Now there, in context, Rashi explains that it means when the clothing is worn out, karachas, meaning like the back of the head, is like the back, when the clothing is already old and worn, versus gabachas, the front of the head, would represent like the beginning of the clothing's useful life when it's still new and fluffy. But in any case, the Pasuk uses that same phrase over there. So malahalan, porach b'kulei tahor, therefore, says Rav Yonis and Menav Tumos, we can learn exeira shava, just like in a person, if he's completely covered with saras, then he's tahor, afkan, porach b'kulei tahor, the same way with clothing, if the entire thing is covered with saras, then it's tahor. Now, the Chachamim disagree with him. They don't learn that Zera Shava. So now, let's say a piece of clothing were to be entirely covered with saras. So now, again, if somebody took that clothing into the Beis Mikdash, or if he touched it and then went into the Beis Mikdash, would he be Chayav Karis or not? According to the Chachamim, yes, because it's Tomei, and according to the Yonis and Menav Tumos, no. So therefore, so now you have a Machloikas that involves Karis. Okay. Next. We said in the Braisa, the Gemara had been quoting and darshaning phrase by phrase the Pasuk in Parashat Shoftim that talks about the Zokin Mamre. The Pasuk starts by describing that when they have an argument in some area of Torah, and one phrase in the Pasuk had been Divrei, had been Divrei Rivos B'Sharecha, matters of argument in your gate. So then the Pasuk says you have to go to the Beis Din HaGadol and ask them. So now the Braisa had said Divrei, the word Divrei in the Pasuk, Elo Ha'erchen V'Acharomim V'Hekdeshes, that refers to when a person declares an Erech, which is where the Torah tells us in Parshas B'Chokosai, that he says, I pledge the Erech of myself, or the Erech of Pliny, to the Beis Mikdash. So we look up based on age and gender, and there's an appropriate amount that it says in the Pesukim there to pay. And Charomim, which is a type of hekdesh, the hekdeshes and regular hekdesh. So now the Braisa had said that again, if the Zokin Mamre and the Sanhedrin Gdola are arguing on any of those things, then he will be judged as a Zokin Mamre and be chayev misa. So what are examples of machloikas in those things according to the mayor that can involve Kores? So all of this was, we began actually on Pezayin Amud Aleph. Rav Huna Bar Chinina had asked Rava, how do we understand this Braisa according to Rav Meir, who says that only if it's something that involves Kores or not. So Rava had told Rav Papa, his Talmud, go out of the Beis Medrash and explain it to him phrase by phrase. So since then, since Pezayin Amud Aleph, and now continuing on to Peches Amud Aleph, we're continuing Rav Papa's going through his exposition and his explanation of what the Braisa means. Erchin would be plugged into Rav Meir v'Rabbanan. They could be arguing, for example, in the same machloikas that later on Rav Meir and the Chachamim had. Ditznan, we learn in a Mishnah in Erchin. Hamarich pochas mi ben chodesh. Suppose a person declares, he says, I pledge the erech of this baby who's below 1 month old. Now, if you look in Parashat Bechokosai, it doesn't list an erech for below 1 month. You have from 1 month to 5 years, 5 to 20, etc. So, what happens? Rav Meir Oymen Noisen Domov. Rav Meir says that The mayor says that he instead he won't pay the erchin of the person. Rav Meir says he won't pay the erchin of the person because there's no erech for a baby that age, but instead he'll pay the domim, instead he'll pay the value. In other words, as if this baby were to be sold as a slave, then you would pay that. Then you would pay that. Because Rav Meir holds, the Gemara explains there in Erchin, Rav Meir holds, a person doesn't just say something completely useless. So if he's saying, I pledge the Erech of this baby, and he knows a baby that age doesn't have an Erech, necessarily he must mean that he wants to pledge the Dummim, the actual value of the baby. Where's the Chacham say what he said doesn't count for anything? So now, first of all, the question would be, so now you have, on top of that, you have machlokas, the mayor and the chachamim. So b'chlal, you have the question. So first of all, if he actually gives that, so now is he obligated to give that money to the Beis Mikdash? So now if he were to use money of hektish for kiddushin, then the Mishnah mentions Masechta Kiddushin that if a person uses money of hektish b'mezid for kiddushin, then it's valid kiddushin, because when he takes it and uses it for that, then it means he now takes it into cholin, and now means he was over and now it becomes cholin, but nevertheless he was over on an avera of using hektish, as opposed to if it was b'shogeg, then it wasn't kiddushin because he thought that it was his. So now is this money that he pledged to hektish, is this money hektish or not, according to Reb Meir? According to the mayor, yeah, it would be hektish. Therefore, he can't be makadish with it. And according to the chachamim, he could be makadish with it because he doesn't have to pay anything at all. So now you have again a question that ends up involving something of dinim mamonis, which in turn involves kores, because there's the question of whether the kedushin over here is valid. Rashi mentions another possibility is also, let's say he didn't end up paying, and now. So another example would be that let's say he did b'shoigig. Now he used this money afterwards b'shoigig. Is he chayev an osham for it? Is he chayev an asham me'ilas? According to the mayor, yes. According to the chachamim, no. Well, therefore, is that korban a valid korban? Now, if a person were to bring the bring this korban, and somebody else who's tameh eats that korban, would he be chayev kores or not? A person is chayev kores for eating a korban when he's tameh. According to the mayor, yes, because it was a necessary korban. According to the chacham, it turns out it wasn't necessary at all, this korban, because he never committed me'ilah in the first place, because his money wasn't hektish, and therefore there's no kores for eating it. Next. So that would be a case with erchin, again, which involves, which ends up involving a matter of kores. Next, where do we find the nafkamina as far as a chayim, where it could end up in a matter of kores? There you could have, let's say they're arguing on the argument of Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira and the Chachamim. Ditnan, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, now we have two kinds of chayim. You have a chayim, you have what's called chayim la gavoya, which means it's a chayim l'gavoya would be it goes to the treasury of the Beis Mikdash. It's basically hektish under another name. Instead of saying that this is hektish, he says that this is chayim. It goes to the treasury of the Beis Mikdash, and they use it for whatever upkeep of the Beis Mikdash they need. Versus you have something called chayim l'koyanim, which is where instead you can't, unlike a chayim l'gavoya, which is like any other hektish, and you could redeem it, you can buy it back from Hektish, Chayim L'Koyanim, you can't. You have to give it to a Koyan. Once the Koyan has it, then it's completely his money and his property, and he can do whatever he wants with it. But you, the Yisrael, have to give it to him, and there's no other alternative. Now, so the Machloikas, in Masechta Erchin, so if a person clearly says Chayim Gavoya, then fine. If he clearly says Chayim Koyanim, then fine. What if he just says plain Chayim? What is Chayim by default? So Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, Sam Charom al Vedek Abayis. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira holds that Chayim, unspecified, goes to the treasury of the Beis Mikdash, to use for the upkeep, to use for the maintenance of the Beis Mikdash. So therefore, Me'ilah is going to apply to it. So again, we have all the same points as we said before, therefore. So you're going to have the Nafka Mina of if he's Makadish with that money, is it valid Kedushin? You're going to have the Nafka Mina if he brings a Korban Osham for the Me'ilah, is it in fact a valid Korban? According to Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseida, yes. Shenema, because he says, Kol Cherem Kodesh Kedushin, Bu LaHashem. The Pasuk says, every Cherem is holy of holies to Hashem, which means every Cherem, meaning unless he specifically specified that it goes to the Kohenim, then it goes to Hashem. Yeah, because, Where's the Chum say, Chayram, unspecified, goes to the Koyin? Well, if it goes to the Koyin, Me'ilah doesn't apply to it. You have to give it to the Koyin. Until you do, you're not allowed to have Anah from it or anything. But nevertheless, Me'ilah, if he did end up using it, he's over on a lav, but he's stealing from the Koyinim, however you want to look at it, but he's not actually committing the issue of Me'ilah. Because Me'ilah only applies to the property of Hekdesh. Shenemar, and the Chacham say, because the Pasuk says, Kisdei HaChayrim, the Pasuk describes a case where a person sells a Sdei HaChoza, a field that he inherited from his ancestors in Eretz Yisrael, where if then he gives it to Hekdesh, and if he gives it to Hekdesh and he doesn't buy it back before Yovel, then the Pasuk says it goes to the Koyanim whose Mishmer comes out, during whose Mishmer Yom Kippur of Yovel comes out. And it goes to them. And the Pasuk describes it, Kisdei HaChayrim, just like a field of Chayrim, LaKoyin, Tiyach, was also, it will be the Koyanim's inheritance. So we see, say the Chachamim, that Chayrim, by default, goes to Koyanim. Im Kein Matam Alem HaKodesh Kodoshim Hu LaShem, then what about the Pasuk of Yehuda ben Maseida is bringing that it goes to LaShem? That's it, and they say, that just means, Shechal, Kodshim Kodshim, Val Kodshim Kalim. It just means that it's possible to declare, even Kodshim Kodshim and Kodshim Kalim, it's possible to declare them Chayrim. Meaning a person can have, for example, an animal that he designated as a Korban Oila, and now he designates it Cherem. So what does that mean? You don't just give it to the Kohenim, it's already Mom and Hekdesh. It belongs, it has to do Shasagof, it has to be brought to the Korban, it belongs to the Bismikosh, it has to be brought to the Mizbeach. What it means is, in other words, that it will depend whether he originally designated as a Neder or an Adava. We know we have the distinction that a neder is a person says, Hare Olai, I pledge to bring such and such a korban. Later on, he designates one particular animal to do it. The difference is that now with that, if that animal otherwise becomes unavailable for whatever reason for a korban, it dies, it develops a mum, etc., he's not off the hook. He has to bring another one. Because he said, I will bring a korban, meaning it's a chayv on him. Versus a nedava would be where, to begin with, he said, I pledge that this animal will be a korban. Well, now, if that animal dies or develops a mum or what have you, that's it. He's off the hook because it was only this animal. Now, if he now, having this animal as an oila, that he's going to bring as an oila, let's say, or any other kind of korban, if he says that it's going to be cherem, if, to begin with, he had made a neder, then since he's on the hook to give it as a korban, no matter what happens to it, so it means, in other words, it's basically considered that he owns the full monetary value of the animal. In the sense, if such an animal is worth $100, if this animal right now were to die, he would have to take another $100 out of his pocket and go buy another animal. Therefore, now when he declares it cherem, means he has to go give the kohenim $100.
Why can't he give the animals to the Kohen?
Because the animal doesn't belong to him anymore. It's an Oila. It has to be brought as a Korban.
Which one did he say first?
He said first Oila. Now, having designated this animal as an Oila. So the sequence of events when it's a Neder would be, he said, on Sunday he said, I'm going to bring an Oila. On Monday, he took one of his animals and designated it as an oila to fulfill that neder. On Tuesday, he said, I'm making the same animal that I previously declared an oila, I'm now making it cheirom l'koyanim.
Can he do that then?
Well, that's the Pasuk is saying, the Chacham say, that's what we learn from the words, kol cheirom kodesh kodoshim hu l'Hashem, that yes, he has the ability to do it. The result is that now he's going to have to pay the value of the animal to the koyanim. Because it's as if, basically, it's as if he's saying, it's as if he's pledged that I will give the Kohenim the value of this animal. Now, what if to begin with he did it as an Adava? What about if you don't have? So on Sunday he said, this animal will be a Korban. And then on Monday he says this, and he says now that this animal that I previously designated as a Korban will be a Cherem, the Kohenim, will be Cherem plain, as the Chacham say, then what he does is he pays the Toivas Hanal. What he pays the Kohenim is, suppose a person had a chance to get an animal without having to pay for it and without having to pay the full value of it and bring it as a korban. A person certainly would want to have the mitzvah bring a korban. He doesn't necessarily want to spend all the money that takes to buy such an animal. But if somebody were to offer him an animal at a discount, what would he be willing to pay to have that source to bring a korban? That amount is called tovas hanah. That's the amount he pays the kohenim in that case. The point is, the Chacham say, so it's not that Stam Cherem is Lashem. Stam Cherem, when he says unspecified, this animal or this table or this money or whatever is Cherem, then the Chacham say it means Cherem LaKoyin. It means you have to give it to a Koyin. But like that default, that default thing, yeah, by unless he specifically said Chayim LaGavaya. But the Pasuk that Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira brought, Kol Chayim Kodesh Kadoshim Hu LaHashem, teaches us that that concept of saying Chayim LaKoinim is able to apply even to an animal that was already previously designated as a korban.
So he actually has to give it to the Beis Hamikdash, but he has to give it to
The Kohenim a certain amount, depending the value of the Torah, as the case may be, right? So now, again, so you could have an argument between the Zokin Mamre and the Sanhedrin on this case. One of them, so he declared Chayrim plain. Does it belong to Hekdesh, or does it belong to the Kohenim? That means, is it possible now to use it? So now, if he now used that money or that whatever, is he committing Me'ilah, and therefore he has to bring an Osham, and therefore now if somebody eats that Osham when they're Tomei, they would be Chayiv Kares, or does he not have to bring an Osham, and if somebody ate it, they're not Chayiv Kares? So we're back to.
Because it
wasn't necessary to bring in the first place, because there's no Me'ilah, exactly. So there we have an example where they can be arguing on a matter of Me'ilahs, on a matter of Chayrim, and it comes out to something that's Chayiv Kares or not, right? Next, Hekdeshis. What do we have a case of Hekdesh where there would be such a machloikas? The Plutas of Eliezer ben Yaakov Rabbanon. You have machloikas of Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov and the Chachamim that they could be arguing on. The Tanya, we learned in a Braisa, we learned this at the beginning of the Masechta. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omar, Filut Snoda Shal Hekdesh. Even if you have a tiny little fork of Hekdesh, so a person, specifically a Snoda, is a little fork that's used for spinning gold threads. The process of spinning gold threads includes a little fork-shaped utensil. So even something little like that, if a person donated it to Hekdesh, and now he wants to buy it back from Hekdesh, or somebody else wants to buy it from Hekdesh, you need 10 people to evaluate the value of it in order to be able to buy it back from Hekdesh. Rabbi Lezman Yaakov loans it from a pasuk. The Chachamim disagree. At the beginning of the sechta, they said you only need 3 people. So now, again, so let's say now you have, now a board of 3 people got together and established the value of it, and he went and bought it back from Hekdesh. According to the Chum, that's fine. It now belongs to him. He can use it to be Mekadesh, a woman. And now if he uses it, there's no problem with it. According to the Blazim and Yaakov, no good. It still belongs to Hekdesh until you have 10 people evaluate it. Therefore Me'ilah will apply. Right. Well, therefore, so now, again, he can't be Makadish a woman with it, B'shoigig, and if he does use it, then he's Chayiv a Kohen Me'ilah, and there we go, we have things that bring to Kares.
And also, he could be living with someone who's not even, if he's Makadish a woman with it.
Once he's Makadish a woman, then yeah, if he's Mizana, then yeah. Yeah. Okay, next. The Braisa on Pezayin and Aleph had continued Rivois, a word in the Pasuk in connection with the whole matter of coming to the Sanhedrin in the first place, has in it the word Rivois, which means arguments, and he said Zashkos Soita. This refers to an argument involving the giving the Soita to drink, because that's Rivois, because the husband and wife had an argument in the first place, and that's what led to this whole thing. And also a case of Egla Arufa, which again involved a Riv, because there was obviously, how is this person lying dead in the field over there? There must have been 2 people got in a fight, he and another person, and the other person killed him. The Taras Mitzurah and the purification of a Mitzurah, because that also involves a Riv, because the Mitzurah was speaking Lashon Hara, and the person speaking Lashon Hara, and therefore he got Saras. So where do we have examples of all of those that can lead to a matter of Kares? So Hashkos Soita b'Plukta Eliezer Rabbi Yeshua, the giving the Soita to drink, that they can be arguing, for example, on what Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua argue on. The Tanan Hamakan, the first Mishnah in Soita says Hamakan leIshtoi, when a man warns a husband warns his wife not to be alone with another person. Rabbi Eliezer Omer Makan al Pishnayim Umashka al Makan al Pishnayim. Rabbi Eliezer says you need 2 Edim for the warning. Umashka al Pi Ed Echad Oy al Piatzmoi. When it comes to how do we know that she was secluded with this other guy, which now makes her a Soita, so you need only 1 aid, or even the husband himself can come and say that she was secluded with this guy, and therefore that kicks off the whole Sota procedure. Rabbi Yeshua Omer Makane al Pishnayim Umashka al Pishnayim. Rabbi Yeshua says you need 2 Edim for the warning, as well as 2 Edim for the
drinking.
So now let's say that you don't have 2 Edim for the Sira, for the seclusion. Now, if she says, I don't want to drink the Sota water. Now, the thing is, in general, once you have a Sota, says that if she says at any point during the procedure, I don't want to drink, then she's potter from most of the time until it comes to the very end of it. She's potter from drinking. However, she will have to be divorced and will forfeit her ksuba. She won't get her ksuba payment. So now let's say you had one aid that she was secluded, or the husband himself comes to Beis Din and says that she was secluded. So now we're going to start the whole soita procedure. But what if she says, I don't want to drink the water? Well, according to Rabbi Yezer, she forfeits her ksuba, because according to him, you don't need to aid him for the stira. According to Rabbi Yeshua, she's still entitled to her ksuba. Now, what would happen if she were, now it's possible, as the Gemara talks about Masechta Ksubas, it's possible for a married woman to sell the future value of her ksuba to somebody else. She can say, basically, look, eventually when if my husband dies before me, or if he divorces me, I'm going to be entitled to 200 zuz, or whatever it is. I'm going to sell you the future value of that ksuba. Now, the other person is taking a risk. If she dies first, then there's no ksuba payment. But if not, then, and of course, it's going to depend. How well are they getting along? How old is she? How old or unhealthy is he versus she, etc. So it's going to be a risk, but it's a potential investment.
So a discount.
Yeah. So there'll be a discount. Now, so the question is, so now, is that a valid sale or not? So now, if you say that she has a ksuba, then it was a valid sale. If he now takes the money, if he now, when it's time for the ksuba to be paid, if this third party person goes and grabs from the estate the value from the estate of the husband, the value of, look, I bought her ksuba, therefore I'm entitled to X amount, is that money his or not? Now, can he be mekadosh a woman with it, which is always the acid test of whether money belongs to you or not? And if she's mekadosh a woman, and then she's later on mezana, is she chayiv mitzvah? Is there kares involved? There you go. That's how a machlokas about the giving the soita to drink can wind up leading us to something which is chayiv kares.
I think part I understand, because it's done with in the mitzvah, it's done with kohanim. It's a whole procedure.
Yeah, but that doesn't necessarily involve kares if they do it.
But drinking, you can't. After all, you know. You have to ask. I'm always going to be more into people giving her the drinks.
No. We're talking about the kinui and the stira. We're talking about...
That part I understand. Yeah. First part I understand.
Yeah. So we're talking about the stira, the seclusion, right, that she was alone with this other guy that her husband warned her against. How many aidim do you need for that? According to Rabbi Yezer, you only need one aid, or the husband himself can say that it was. According to Rabbi Yeshua, you need two.
But the other part we're saying about the drinking...
That's what we're talking about. What we mean, hashkar soita, means they're arguing, does she have to drink? Well, if she now says, I don't want to drink, does she forfeit her ksuba for that? According to Rabbi Yezer, yes. According to Rabbi Yeshua, no. She's not a soita in the first place, because according to Rabbi Yeshua, there were no two aidim to see that she was secluded, so therefore the whole procedure of the soita never kicks off in the first place, according to Rabbi Yeshua. Yeah. Okay. Next, Arifas Egla, that would be the plug to Rabbi Yezer and Rabbi Akiva. You could have the machlokas as far as the Egla Arufa, as far as the same machlokas of Rabbi Yezer and Rabbi Akiva. The Tanan, in Soita, me'ayin hoyu moedidin, from what part of the body would they measure? We know the Torah tells us you have to measure to the closest city, and the closest city is the one that brings the Egla Arufa. So what part of the body do you measure from? Rabbi Yezer and mitiburai. Rabbi Yezer says you measure from his navel, from his belly button. Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Akiva says, "Nose." Rabbi Lezman Yaakov, "Mimokim shenasa cholol." Rabbi Lezman Yaakov says, "You measure from the place where he becomes, where a person is called a cholol. Usually, when a person is killed, means he was killed by a sword, by being beheaded, for example. Obviously, there's many ways of killing a person, but he learns based on a pasuk that the word cholol refers to somebody who was killed by a sword, mitzavore, which means that he was hit in the neck." So you have a three-way machloikas, what part of the body you measure from. It's Soita over there. The Gemara shows how each of them learns from psukim and from various considerations. Anyway, the point is, again, so now, let's say, for example, you have the body is almost exactly in the middle between two cities, but the nose is slightly closer to one city, and the belly button is slightly closer to the other city. So now, let's say the Skenim argue about which city the Sanhedrin has to go and measure and find the closest city, so they have the same machloikas. So now what happens is, so you have city A and city B, so each one, so now let's say because of this argument, each one goes and brings an Egla Arufa. Well, now a true Egla Arufa is also Bahanoa. The Gemara actually mentions elsewhere that as soon as it's brought down into the valley where the procedure is going to take place, already at that point it becomes also Bahanoa. And for sure, after it was already decapitated, then the corpse of it, the carcass of it, is also bana. So now, let's say you have, so now city A and city B, because of the machloikas, they wound up bringing two egla arufas. But each one brought an egla arufa. But now, later on, somebody takes the carcass of this egla arufa and uses it to be mekadesh a woman. Does it work or not? If it's also bana, it doesn't work. If it's not also bana, then it works. So now you have, therefore, machlokas regarding the Egla Arufa, which can lead to kares. Next. Taras Mitzora, where we have a case involving... Where do we have a case involving the Tara of Mitzora, which can lead to a case of Kodesh or not? Now, an obvious answer is whether he's Tohar or not, or whether he can come into Bes Mikdash. But in each of these cases, as much as possible, the Gemara wants to find an actual attested machloikas, an actually known machloikas that we know about a particular point, where therefore the Zokin Mamre and the Sanhedrin might conceivably be arguing about it. In other words, with this whole thing that we've been going on now for a block and a half, there are some of them where the Gemara didn't really need to go into that level of detail. Obviously, we're talking about, for example, Mitzora. If he's Tohar, he's Tohar. If he's Tomei, then he's Chayiv Kodesh. So going to the Bez Mikdash, the Gemara could have stopped right there. But with each one of them, the Gemara wants to find an actual example of a machloikas that they could be arguing about, a machloikas that we already know that Tanoim have, where therefore, in a previous generation, they might also have had that same machloikas. The Tanan, so therefore that would be Beplugta, so Beplugta did Rav Shimon and Rabbanon. You would have, for example, the argument between Rav Shimon and the Chachamim about the Tara of Mitzora. The Tanan, we learn in a Mishnah in Masechta Negoyim. Now the Torah tells us in Parshas Mitzora that the procedure of making a Mitzora Tohar involves, so he brings a couple of Korbanos, one of them being a Korban Osham, and then the Kohen takes some of the blood of the Osham and daubs it and applies it on his ear, on his right thumb, and his right toe, his right big toe. Within the ear tnuch, which Rashi defines over there as the cartilage inside the ear, so whatever, he applies it over there, and to his thumb, and to his big toe, on his right hand, his right side. Now, what happens, emlei boyhen yad, boyhen regel, oizen yamonis? What if this mitzvah doesn't have a right thumb, or a right toe, or a right ear?
Why would the answer be right?
What? Because it has to be the right, that's how the Torah says it. Well, that's what we're going to see. Ein loy tarei lomis, the Tanakhama says, that's it, there's never any way of him becoming Tahar. We learned earlier in the Masechta, the Chachamim hold, but in kro kedichtiv, we have to have, whenever the Torah gives us a procedure, you have to do exactly the procedure as it says in the Pesukim. And here, since the Torah says the right thumb and the right earlobe and the ear cartilage or whatever, and the right big toe, then it means it has to be those and there's no substitution. On the other hand, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Eliezer says you put it where the thumb or the toe or whatever would have been, where they were amputated from. Rabbi Shimon, And Rabbi Shimon says you can place them on the left ear or thumb or toe in your yotze. So now, let's say they have this person who's missing one of those three body parts. He comes to the Bes Mikdash to bring his korbanos and become tahor so that he can finally re-enter the Bes Mikdash or eat korbanos. And now, he doesn't have his ear, thumb, or toe. Can you make him Tohar or not? You have this three-way machlokas, whether it's possible to. According to the Tanakhama, it's impossible to ever make him Tohar. Therefore, if now he goes into the Bes Mikdash, any time after that, he's going to be Chayiv Kodesh. As opposed to, according to Rav Shimon, that if they put it on his left ear, thumb, and toe, then that's it, he's good. So therefore, so you have a machlokas there of whether something that would involve Kodesh and Achatas. Now, Tosfos actually pointed out earlier that with a number of these things where we're talking about entering the Bes Mikdash, the problem with it is, when a person enters the Bes Mikdash when he's Tomei, yes, he's Chayiv Kodesh if it was Bemezid, but if it's Meshoigah, he's not bringing a regular Chatas. He's bringing instead a special kind of korban called a korban Olav Yored, which unlike a regular Chatas, which is always the same kind of thing, a female sheep or a female goat, here an Olav Yored depends on what he can afford. If he can afford it, it's a sheep. If he can't afford that, then it's two birds. And if he can't even afford that, then it's a korban Mincha. Now, Reb Meir had said that the case where a Zokin Mamre, where a person becomes a Zokin Mamre, is when he's arguing on something which involves Kores and a Chatas. So according to Rashi, you have the Kores over here, where's the Chatas? So Tosfos explained earlier in the Sugya, in a different connection, that they explained, let's say, for example, now this Mitzvah, or this person who was a Mitzvah and now maybe has become Tahor, maybe not, depending on the Machloikas, let's say now he touches a loaf of bread of Truma. Did he make it Tomei or not? If he made it Tomei, then it has no value, or very little value. Now, it may not be even a Shava Pruta. Now, if the Koyan were to take that and be Makadish, a woman with it, it's not a Shava Pruta. As opposed to, if we say that it wasn't Tomei, then it still has value, therefore we can be Makadish with it. So therefore, you have a Machloikas that winds up in something of Kiddushin, which again brings the car.
Why say a Koyan is not worse than a Pruta?
Because if it's Tomei, he can't eat it. If Truma becomes Tomei, you can't eat it. The only thing you can do is use it as firewood. So if it's a loaf of bread, maybe conceivably, but even then it may not be a Pruta. If it's, for example, liquids of Truma, you can't even use those to burn in a fire, or you can bury them, really, so then, or spill them out or whatever, then they're not even worth a Pruta.
You can't give it to animal because...
No, you can't give it to now. Well, whether you can give Truma Tmeya to an animal, actually, I think there is a discussion of Rishonim about that question. But even if, yeah, it may not be worth a Pruta. Next. So fine, so there you have a Machloikas that could lead to something that's Chayiv Kodesh. Next. The Braisan Pezayin Amar Aleph had brought the next word from the Pasuk in Parashas Shoftim that said Bishorecha, that you have an argument in your gates, meaning in your cities, and then the Pasuk says, and you get up and go to the Sanhedrin Gdola in Yerushalayim. So now, the Pasuk says Bishorecha, and the Braisan said Zeleket Shitchopeya, means where the Zok and Mamre and the other Chachamim are arguing about a matter involving Leket Shitchopeya. So let's go through each of those and find where it can lead to something that's Chayav Karis. Leket Ditznan. We have like this. A Mishnah in Masechta Peah. Shnei Shibolin Leket. If a person drops two stalks of grain, then that's considered Leket and he has to leave it for the poor people. Shloisha. But if he drops three or more at a time, Einan Leket, then it's not Leket and he's allowed to pick it up. Shnei Omrin, similarly, if he forgot two bundles of grain, which is the mitzvah of shikha, then it would be considered shikha, and he has to leave it for the poor person. Shloisha Einan Shikha, and if he forgets three or more, then it's not shikha. Va'akulan, in all those cases, this Shama Omrin, Sholosh La'oni Va'arbala Balabais. In each of those cases, the two versus three is the Hillel. But Shama says in each of those cases, three versus four. So in other words, if a person dropped three stalks of grain, according to Beis Shammai, it's considered leket, it belongs to the poor people. According to Beis Hillel, it's not leket, and he can keep it for himself. So Rashi points out that in Sifra, in the Medrash Halacha, on Chumash Vayikra, when it talks about these mitzvahs in Parshas Kedoshim, then the Sifra brings over there what the sources are, where Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel get their respective opinions from. But again, the question is, well, does it belong to the Balabas or not, or does it belong to the Ani? So now let's say they drop three stalks of grain, and the Oni comes and takes them, like Beis Shammai, but then the owner comes and takes it from him, like Beis Hillel. Well, who does it belong to? Who can be Mekadosh a woman with it? And there you go, there you got to something which is Kodesh and Achatos. So that takes care of Leket and Shikha. Peah would be the Plugta de Rabbi Shmuel v'Rabbanan. You can have the Machlokas of Rabbi Shmuel and the Rabbanan. Ditznan, mitzvah Peah lahafrish min hakama. The proper way to do the mitzvah of Peah is to set it aside while the grain or whatever kind of produce is still standing. So in other words, you don't harvest it and then give it to the poor people. The mitzvah of Peah is supposed to be you leave a section of your field, the end of the field, unharvested, and the aniyim come and take it themselves.
They're not getting rid of something they can eat to have salt taken process.
It's still right. But that's the mitzvah peah, it's supposed to be that way. Loy hifrish min akoma, what happens if he didn't set it aside while it's still standing? Yafrish min ha'omrin, then he should set aside peah out of the sheaves of grain, out of the bundles of grain. Loy hifrish min ha'omrin, if he didn't do it even from then, from the bundles of grain, yafrish min akri ad shalay merchoy, then he should still separate peah from the pile of clean grain before he did miruach. The whole processing of grain involves that they go through many after they harvest it and they bundle it. Then they do you have all the malachas in connection with the Shabbos dosh, where they thresh it to break the shells and then start the process of removing the straw and everything from it. Then you have the other processes to where eventually you have a pile of clean grain, just grain kernels without any of the straw or shells or any of that junk. Now, after that, once you have the pile is finished, then you do miruach, which is you smooth out the sides of the pile. At that point, it's considered gemar malacha. At that point is when the grain becomes chayiv and meiser. So now, you threshed and you winnowed and you did all the other malachas with your grain. You have it in a stack. Give payah from it at that point before you do miruach. Merchoy, what happens if he did do miruach? Ma'aser v'noisimloy. Then he still has to get payah from it. He still doesn't get out of giving payah. However, at this point, now he has to take ma'aser from it before he can give it to the oni, because now it's chayiv and ma'aser. So Rabbi Shmuel Amru, af mafer mishum Rabbi Shmuel Amru, af mafer shmina itza. They said in the name of Rabbi Shmuel that even after that, even if he already went as far as making dough out of it, then he can still take a piece of the dough, the appropriate amount of the dough, and give that as payah. So now let's say he did that. So now let's say he took some of it and gave it as payah to the poor people out of his dough, according to Rabbi Shmuel. But now let's say again, you have the Zok and Mamre and the other Chachamim arguing about whether he needs to do that or not. Now, the Chachamim, the reason Rabbi Shmuel holds you should do it, because in other words, he holds, listen, you were supposed to give payah all this time, so it's not too late. The Chachamim take the view that once already it's been ground up and made into flour and baked into dough, etc., then you have a shinui. Now, at this point, the Chachamim hold, basically, it's considered that the balabas already has been koneh with a shinui, and now at that point, then, it's too late to get payah from it, because now it belongs fully to the balabas. It's considered that he stole it from the aniyim, but nevertheless, at this point, you don't make him give it to the aniyim. So now, again, the question would be, let's say that he took a piece of the dough and gave it as payah, according to Rabbi Shmuel, it belongs to the Ani, and therefore he can be Mekadosh a woman with it. And according to the Chacham, it doesn't belong to the Ani, and it can't be Mekadosh a woman with it. So there you have where it comes out to a matter of...
Once it's dough,
whether you still give payah from it anymore. According to Rabbi Shmuel, yes. According to the Chacham, no. Tosfos, by the way, discusses over here why he would have to give. We said that if the pile of grain has been that miruach has been done, at that point you'd have to give meiser before he gives the payah to the poor person. So Tosfos discusses why that should be. On the face of it, we should say the part that's supposed to go to the oni is never chayiv and meiser in the first place. Why should he be required to give meiser for that part?
Maybe the oni is relying on it. If you went so far.
No, because that's the point. Whenever you give payah to the poor person, it's payah is potter from maaser by definition. We learn from Pesukim elsewhere, the Gemara learns that anything that's hefker and anything that's given as matnas aniyim is potter from maaser. So let's say for example, al pi halacha, your payah has to be at least 1/60th. I mean, atorah any amount. That's why we say in morning davening, payah va'bi elu dvarim she'en lam shiru payah. But midrash rabbanan is supposed to be 1/60th. So let's say you have over here. So let's say you have over here 600 saw of grain, let's say. So your payah is supposed to be 10 saw out of it. Now we're saying if you got so far as miruach, then you have to take meiser on behalf of the whole 600. So you'd have to take out, for example, 60 to give to the levy, and then you take out whatever. You take out two out of every 100. So you take out 12 or so, whatever, and give to the kohen, and then you take out one tenth of what remains at that point, which is about 58 and change, and give it to the levy. The question is, why should you need to do that? You should first think, how much of it do we have to subtract for the Ani? We have to subtract 1/60th, which is going to be 10. And therefore, the Truma and Maisa that we give is figured on the basis of 590, not on the basis of 600. So Tosfos discusses that a little bit. There's the question of Yesh Breira or Ein Breira. Do we say that the 10 that he's giving to the Oni out of the 600 is, to begin with, this was retroactively, this was what was meant for him all along? Or do we say Ein Breira and it's not? So it would have to do with that. But either way, Tosfos says that, listen, you know, the fact is,
Not a punishment,
but it's just the fact is it all belongs to him, and then the whole thing became Chayiv and Meiser, and now it doesn't become Potter just because he's giving pay after the fact. Okay. Then Tosfos goes on to discuss matters involving Truma over here, but anyway, yeah. The question is, why did it say Ma'aser v'noson? Why didn't it say Torem or Ma'aser? He has to give Truma as well. So Tosfos discusses that point a little bit as well. Anyway. Fine. So there you go. So now we've gone through that entire brisa. Rav Papa has spent all this time since Pesayin Amud Aleph explaining to Rav Huna Bar Chinina how every single case, every single area of halacha that the brisa had mentioned, where the zokin might conceivably be arguing with Sanhedrin, could make him a zokin mamre, all within Rav Meir's opinion that it has to be something where there's kores and achatos, because in every single one of those areas in halacha, you can have something which leads to something, which leads to something, which ends up to kores and achatos.
As we both skill.
And it has to be right. Next, the Mishnah had said, Gimel Bote Dinim V'chola. The Mishnah had described that there were three Bote Dinim in the Beis HaMikdash complex. So the first they would go, there was one by the entrance of the, first there was one by the in the Harabayis, then there was one by the entrance of the Azara, and then there was the Sanhedrin Gdola in the Lushkas Agazis. So we described how they would go first to the first one by the entrance of the Harabayis, and if they couldn't resolve it over there, then they'd go to the one by the entrance of the Azara, and if they couldn't figure it out over there, then they'd go to the Lushkas Agazis. Now, the Mishnah had gone on to say that to it, so now, if he argues with the Sanhedrin Gdolah, so the Mishnah had described that he comes to the Sanhedrin, and each time they're saying, Kach Dorashti V'Kach Dorshu Chavei, right? This is what I've been doushening, this is what my colleagues have been doushening, Kach Limadti V'Kach Lindu Chavei, right? This is what I've been teaching, and this is what my Chaveirim have been teaching, and we can't resolve the argument between them, so can you resolve it for us? So now, What's the basis of the argument? What's the, on what basis is a Zuckin saying his opinion, and on what basis are they saying theirs? Now you think of that. When you have, when Chachamim are giving a psak din, it can be based on something that they learned from their Rebbeim, or it can be that they themselves came up with something based on one of the Yud Gimel Midas Shatur and addresses them. So now the Gemara is going to take up that point. Amar Rav Kahana, hu aymim piyashmua, vehein aymim piyashmua. If he says that the din, the way I'm saying it, is based on what I learned from my Rebbeim, and they're also saying the piyashmua, but we learned from my from our Rebbeim differently, then Rav Kahana says, einin neharag, you would not execute him as a zaken mamre for that, because he has a right. He has a right to follow his Rebbeim's opinion. You can't call him mamre. You can't call him disobedient to the Sanhedrin because of that. And also Rav Kahana says, also if he says, this is my opinion, I came up with this shitta on my own, but they also say we came up with a different shitta on our own, then also ain't an erag, then also you can't execute him as a zokin mamre, because they both have their svara, so fine, each one's entitled to their svara. And all the more so, who aim in piashmur, aim in kachu beinenu, aim in erag. All the more so, says Rav Kahana, if he were to say that I have the Kabbalah from my Rebbeim this way, and they're saying, no, we hold differently, then no, also for sure, aim in erag, he has every right, there's Rebbe's opinion, there's Rebbeim's opinion, and they're only arguing with him based on Svara. Ad Shigyoimar, so Rav Kahana says, when would he be chayav? Only if he says, kachu beinai, this is the Svara that I came up with. And they say, no, but we learned from our Rebbeim differently. Then if he continues to maintain his opinion and paskin the way he said, then he's going to be chayav misa. Keda. So it's not just enough that he teaches. The Mishnah had said, if he can teach however he wants, it has to be that he passes practical halacha for himself or for others to do differently than the Sanhedrin. But now Rav Kahana is also adding a point. It would have to be that his psak din is based on his own svara that he's maintaining, even though the Sanhedrin Gerla is telling him that we learned from our Rebbeim differently.
This is one of the groups in the Beis Midrash.
The Lishkas Agazis is Sanhedrin Gdola. He himself, we learned previously, he himself is a great distinguished Talmud Chacham, a mufla, somebody who's capable of darshining and paskining halacha. Nevertheless, though, when the Sanhedrin Gdola says their opinion, then he has to bow to it.
But is he
he's not a member of the Lishkas Agazis himself, necessarily. Okay. He could be from anywhere in Eretz Yisrael, but, yeah. Okay. Yeah, we talked about yesterday a little bit. We talked about the question. We've shown him discuss the question. The Meiri brings up the point. Would it have to be that he's arguing with the entire Sanhedrin Gdolah, or is it enough that the majority of them vote against him? The Meiri had said that it has to be that all of them, but on the other hand, the Rambam says clearly in Pirush HaMishnayos that no, it's enough if he's arguing on a majority of them. Achridam Lahatas, after all. Anyway, so, Keda, so Rav Kahana says, I'll prove to you that it's so. That, in fact, that if he argues with them where he says, I learned from my Rebbeim, then you can't call him a Zaken Mamre, Sharei Lehogu as Akavya ben Mahalalel. Because we see they didn't execute Akavya ben Mahalalel as a Zaken Mamre. We know famously Akavya ben Mahalalel is in the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, Yisachar b'Shloshet Bnei and all that, but we also find in the Mishnah in Avos that he argued with the Chachamim on four halachas. One of them we learned earlier in the sugya, actually, they argued about a yellow discharge from a woman. Is it dam nida or not? He held yes, though. The chacham held no. Now, the Mishnah describes over there, actually, what happened was they offered him the position of Av Beis Din if he would take back his view on those four things. Some historians explain that, well, because they didn't want an argument within the Sanhedrin, if they could help it. Some historians explain what it was is, we see from our Gemara that Akavi ben Malalo lived at a time when they were still doing Mrs. Beis Din. There's an interesting explanation that what it was is the Mishnah in Chagiga tells us that when Hillel first became Nasi, his Av Beis Din was first someone named Menachem. But then Menachem didn't last long. He left and went to work for the king, for King Hurdus, and then they appointed Shammai instead. So some historian, Dodos HaRishonim, says that that may have been the time that when they offered it to Akavi ben Malalel, so first they offered it, either they offered it to him first and he turned it down, as the Mishnah says over there, and then they offered it to Menachem and then to Shammai, or maybe the other way around, first Menachem, then Akavi, then Shammai. Whatever it is, the point is that they offered him the position of Av Beis Din at some point if he would take back his opinion on those four things, and he said no. He said, I'd rather be called a fool for my entire lifetime that I gave up such a distinguished position rather than be called a Rosha for even one moment in front of Hashem that I learned these four things from my Rebbeim and I hold this is the halacha and I would give it up just in order to get that position. Anyway. Now, the point is, though, he's disagreeing with the Sanhedrin and he continued to disagree with them afterwards. But why wasn't he a Zaken Mamre?
Did he pass them?
The Gemara apparently is assuming, Rav Hana at least is assuming that he was actually paskening. In fact, later on, the Mishnah goes on to say that before Akavya passed away, he says to his son, I want you to take back, I want you to start following the Chachamim in these four things. And then his son asks, why? You held differently. And Akavya explains to him, because like this, I learned from my Rebbeim, they learned from their Rebbeim, so fine, it's a Rabbim against a Rabbim, each of us was entitled to our own opinion. But you, how do you know these four halachas only from me? I'm a Yochid, against a Rabbim, doesn't count. So it sounds like, because the son hadn't heard it directly from Akavya's Rebbeim. The point is, in other words, so it sounds like he was actually paskening halacha for people, and that's why he's telling his son, don't continue paskening halacha this way, start paskening the way the rest of the Chachamim do. Now, Rav Kahana is saying, why don't they execute Akavya ben Mahalalel? On the face of it, he's paskening halacha. The reason must be because he said, I learned it from my Rebbeim, and Rav Kahana says, there you go. You see that if the Zakin is saying, I learned from my Rebbeim, then you can't judge him as a Zakin Mamre.
Wow.
Yeah. Rav Loza says, no. I disagree with Rav Kahana. Even if he says, I heard from my Rebbeim, and they're saying, never mind your Rebbeim, our Svara tells us differently. Rav Loza says, also Nerag, even then we execute him as a Zakin Mamre. What do you mean their whole basis is, one second, we'll talk about Akavim and Allah. Their whole basis is only a Svara of theirs, and he has something that he learned from his Rebbeim. Shouldn't that outweigh that? Nope, says Rav Loza. Kadesh la Yuru Machloikas v'Yisrael. We don't want Machloikas to proliferate among the Jewish people. So therefore, even if he has a reason, he's saying Mepi Yashmua, and they're saying only based on Svara, nevertheless, the Torah wants us to follow the Sanhedrin, whether he thinks they're right or wrong, he still has to be Mevatel his Dai. Because of theirs. The imtoimar mipnei malai hogi was akavet ben malalo. So in that case, Taka, why didn't they execute akavet ben malalo? The reason is because they're understanding that he did not paskin halacha lemaisa. He taught that this should be the din, but he never actually paskin, for example, for a woman who had a yellow discharge, that she should be tomei. So he's only teaching that it should be that way, but therefore he's not a zaken mamre. So the Gemara says, Tanan, well, let's see, which one of those opinions of Rav Kahana or Rav Elazar does our Mishnah fit better with? The Mishnah had said that the argument goes, Kach darashti v'kach dorshu chavei, right? This is how I daushin from the Yud Gimel Midas, and this is how my colleagues daushin. Kach limadti, this is how I learned. V'kach lindu chavei, right? This is how my colleagues have been teaching. My love, duhu omer mepiashmur behenemim kachu beinenu. Doesn't the Mishnah mean, even when he says, I learned from my Rebbeim this way, and this is why I hold this way, and they're saying only mepiashmur, and therefore, and we're saying that he can be a Zakin Mamre. So the Mishnah then fits better according to Rabbi Elazar. The answer is no, he doesn't have to mean that. Rabbi Kana would understand the Mishnah very easily. The other way around, Davka, when he says, I hold that it should be this way, because I came up with this drasha, and they're saying, no, we learned from our Rebbeim differently, that's the one possibility where Rabbi Kana says, he could be a Zakin Mamre, so our Mishnah does not contradict that. The Gemara says, Toshma, let's try to bring another proof. The Amr of Yoshia, Shloisha Dvarim Sochli Ze'ira Me'anshe Yerushalayim. Ze'ira, one of the men of Yerushalayim, Me'anshe often means one of the distinguished people of Yerushalayim. So Rav Yoshia says he taught me three things. A soch actually means just like a conversation. It's like he wasn't even coming to teach him. They were just like having a conversation, and he mentioned these three dinim. This is the kind of thing the Gemara mentions elsewhere. I feel sichas tamid chachamim, sricha talmud, even when a tamid chacham says something in casual conversation, you can learn a lot from it.
Is Zira even small?
Zira literally means small. Maybe he's taka short, but whatever. Zira means that was the name, yeah. The first one, Baal Shemochal Al-Kinuye. Now, we talked before about the Soita, and where the husband warns the wife, don't be alone with this person. If he now is Moichal on that, then it's a valid mechila, meaning if now she were to go and be secluded with this guy, then nothing happens. The whole search of procedure doesn't kick off. Tosfos explains that there is a deadline here. Once the Megillah, once the scroll that's written with the psukim for her is dissolved, once the ink is dissolved into the water, then at that point it's too late for him to be Moichel, because now Hashem's name has already been erased. But up to that point, he could be Moichel, and the whole search thing would never kick off. She's not supposed to be alone with this guy, but the fact is, she won't be a soita unless there was a formal warning not to be alone, and so Zaira is saying that the husband is able to take back that warning and be moichel on it. The second thing, Ben Sora Moda Shirotsu Obavima Lim Kholoi Mochalin, Mochalin Lloyd. The second thing is similarly with a Ben Sora Moda. We learned earlier in the Masechta all about the Ben Sora Moda, about where the parents warn him and he's going and stealing from his father and buying meat and wine and so on and so forth. So even after they gave him Asura, and even after he got the Malkus, and now he did it again, and now at this point we should have Edim that make him Chayav Misa, nevertheless, at any time the parents can be Mochal on it and not bring him to based in for the second thing. So therefore he'll never end up actually getting executed because it's up to them. They're not required to bring him to based in for that. If they don't bring him, then there's not going to be any missa. Now, by the way, it's an interesting point over here. Rashi had said that if she was Nistera in the case of the Soita, if she was secluded, and then she wouldn't become also to him, in other words, implying that, so Rashi is not clarifying, does he mean that the husband can be moichel the kinui only before the Stira? What happens if he's moichel after the Stira? Would that work? From Rashi's Loshen is not necessarily so clear. Tosfos clearly says that he can do it any time until the Megillah is erased. The Rambam holds that no, he can only do that until the Stira. Once the stira takes place, then the Rambam learns he can't be moichel retroactively anymore.
And moichel meaning that?
Then he says that, I'm not, forget it, I don't want you to be a soita. So in other words, according to the Rambam, if he warned her, and then she was alone with this person, then it's too late for him to be moichel. This has nafkamina and halacha nowadays as well, because the Gemara mentions in soita, even though we talked before about the opinions of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, that they both held you need two edim for the kinui, in fact, the Gemara brings an opinion over there that you don't need two edim for the kinui. That's enough to just have the husband says privately to the wife, don't be alone with Pliny. Now, nowadays, we have no soita water. If a woman becomes a soita, then she's also to her husband forever, because there's no soita water to make her innocent. Therefore, the Gemara warns over there, and it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, a husband should never say such a thing to his wife, should never say, don't be alone with this person. Because then if she goes and is alone with him, then she becomes a soita, and then that's it. We have to stop there because we don't have mei soita nowadays. Now, the point is, if we held like Tosfos, that he could be moichel the kinui afterwards, it wouldn't be so bad. Because he could be moichel the kinui and nothing happens. But according to the Rambam, he can't be moichel once the stira took place, therefore don't do it in the first place.
And what is if he's moichel but it still happened?
That's the thing. According to Tosfos, if he's moichel at any time before the Megillah is erased, then that's fine. Then we stop the procedure right there, and it's considered as though she was never a soita.
Even if she did do act.
If she did, then it'll be up to Hashem to punish her. But yeah, as a poet, yeah. But according to the Rambam, no. Okay, so anyway, so the Ben Sora Moda, again, they can be moichel. They don't have to bring him to Beis Din to get Misa. Then the third thing that Ze'ira said, Zokin Mamre, Shirotsu Beis Dinu Lim Chaloi, also by the Zokin Mamre, if Beis Din wants to be Moichel him and allow him to maintain his opinion, Moichel and Loi, then the Ze'ira had said they can be Moichel and he doesn't become a Zokin Mamre. Continues Rabbi Yoshia, Uchshabosi Eitzach Haveirai Shabadorim. Now when I came to my colleagues, the other Talmud Chachamim, in the south of Eretz Yisrael, and I told them what Ze'ira had told me, Al Shnayim Hoyduli, they agreed with me on two of them, about the Soita and about the Ben Sora Moda, Al Zokin Mamri Loi Hoyduli, but they did not agree about the Zokin Mamri, Beis Din cannot forgive him and not allow him to get away with it. Kadesh Lo Yubu Machloikas Yisrael. Again, for the same reason, because we don't want Machloikas to proliferate among the Jewish people. So we see from that, not like Rav Kahana. According to Rav Kahana, there are many cases where he could get away with it because he's saying that I learned from my Rebbeim. And even he could say that I came up with it with my own Svara, and that's fine as long as they also say that there is a based on Svara. In three of the four possible cases, Rav Kahana was going to exonerate him, but based on the logic of the Chachamim of Chaveira Shabadarim, no, we shouldn't allow that because then it means that Machloikas is going to proliferate where it shouldn't. And therefore, Satyufta, so that's a clear contradiction on Rav Kahana, and therefore the halacha is in fact like Rav Elazar. It doesn't matter on what basis he's saying, even he says, I learned from my Rebbeim, even if they say, no, we disagree with you based purely on our own Svara, nevertheless, if he doesn't give up his argument, if he doesn't give up his Piske halacha, he's still going to be a Zokin Mamre. The only reason Akavi ben Mahalal got away with it is he was never passing any practical halacha. Okay. Talking about this point of machloikas among the Jewish people, so the Gemara brings, Tanya, Amar Rav Yosi, Mitzchila, like how you're marvin, machloikas be Israel. Originally, in the time of the Sanhedrin, there was machloikas did not proliferate among the Jewish people, precisely because the Torah gives this mechanism to resolve everything. Ella, based in Shoshivim Echad Yoshim Melishkas Agazis, the Sanhedrin Gdola of 71 would sit in Melishkas Agazis, Ushnei Batadinim Shal Esther Meshloisha, and then you had below them the next lower Batadinim were two of 23 each, Echad Yoshua Pesach Harabayas, the Echad Yoshua Pesach Azara, one by the entrance to the Harabayas, one by the entrance to the Azara. And then you would have Bat Dinim of 23 would be in all the other cities throughout Eretz Yisrael. As we learned in the first parak, any city that had a certain minimum population would have 120 according to the Chachamim, 230 according to Reb Nechemya, would have a base din of 23. So the highest base din was 71. All the other ones were 23. Of those 23, the next higher ones below the Sanhedrin Gdola were both in the Beis Hamikdash complex, one by the Harabayas and one by the Azara, and then everywhere else in Eretz Yisrael, you also had Bat Dinim of 23.
There was 71, 23, and 23 in the Beis Hamikdash.
Right. And then throughout Eretz Yisrael. There are Rishonim, I believe, that Amban holds this way, that each Shevet also had a high Beis Din of its own, and those could have been Bat Dinim of 71. So according to that, there may not have been only one Beis Din of 71. There may have been a Beis Din of 71 for each Shevet, and then within each city, there would be Bat Dinim of 23. Anyway, the point was, because of this system, So now, if they have to ask something of Din, Shtoylim Beis Din Shebeiran, the first thing is, they go to the based in their city and see what they have to say. Im Shamu, if they heard from their Rebbeim an answer to the question, Omer Lehem, then they would tell them. The Imlav, if not, Boyin Lozesha Samuch Le'iran. Then they would go to the next based in the next town over. Different Gusois, whether in fact we have this in the Gemara or not. One possibility is that the Rambam doesn't seem to have that, because the Rambam, when he brings this halacha in Hilchos and Hilchos Mamrim, doesn't bring that point that they would go to the next city. He just says they would go to the one in their city, and if not, then they would go to the one Al Pesach Harabais. Im Shamu Omalahem, if they heard, then they would tell them. Im Lav, if they don't know, Boin Lazesh Al Pesach Harabais, and they would come together to the Beis Din by the entrance of the Harabais and ask them what's the story. Im Shamu Omalahem, if they heard from their Rebbeim the answer, then they would tell them. Im Lav, and if not, Boin Lazesh Al Pesach Azara, they go up to the next higher Beis Din, the one by the entrance to the Azara. Still Bat Dinim of 23. No, this is talking about in general. They have a question in halacha. They have a question in halacha that they can't resolve. We're talking about the Zakin Mamre, because ultimately, if the Zakin, after this whole procedure, after they go and ask the Beis Din HaGadol, then the Zakin Mamre continues to disagree and to pass him differently, then we said he's Chayav Misa. But now we're talking more generally, what was the system, Rabbi Yossi said, that they prevented Machloikas in the first place? Because they had these many, many tiers of Bat Dinim. Omer, the one who asks the question, says, Kach Darashti, this is how I darshan, but Kach Doshu Chaveira, this is how my colleagues darshan with the Yud Gimel Midas differently, Kach Limanti, this is what I was teaching, Kach Limnu Chaveira, and this is what my Chaveirim were teaching. Im Shamu Omer Lahem, if they knew the answer, then they would tell them. V'im Lav Eilav Eilav Boyin Lushkas Agazis. If not, then all of them would come together to the Lushkas Agazis. Shasham Yoshvin. Now the Sanhedrin would sit over there. Now what times of the day would the Sanhedrin sit over there? Mitomid Shal Shachar Ad Tomid Shabein Abayim. They would sit there in session from when they brought the Tomid in the morning until they brought the Tomid in the afternoon. That was the time. When Beis Din would sit. Over Shabbos, over Yom Tovim, and Shabbos and Yom Tov, they wouldn't sit in the Lushkas HaGozis. Instead, Yoshvin B'Chel. Instead, they would sit in the Chel. The Chel was, you had the Azara, and around the Azara, between the Azara and the rest of the Harabayas, you had an area 10 Amos wide called the Chel. It has an extra degree of Kedusha beyond the rest of the Harabayas. Goyim are not allowed to come in there, Tmeimes are not allowed to come in there. They had a fence around it called the Soreg. The fence was made out of wooden lattice work. They had signs on it warning Goyim not to go any further. In fact, they found a couple of those signs in archaeological digs. They have one of them, at least one of them is displayed in a museum in Turkey, because they found it during the time when the Turks were ruling over Eretz Yisrael. It's inscribed in Greek. It says basically any non-Jew is not allowed to go past this point, and if he does, then he's going to be Chayav Misa. So in fact, that's why we find when the Greeks took over that, when the Greeks conquered and took over the Harabais, it says they made 13 breaches in the Sardeg. Later on, when the Hashmonaim recaptured the Bismikdash, they fixed up those breaches, and from then on, they had a special takana that you should bow 13 times as you go around, as you pass any of those places, bow and thank Hashem that he saved us from the Greeks. Anyway, why were they so angry about the Sardeg? That's one reason, because the Sardeg was the limit beyond which they weren't allowed to go, so now they vented out their anger. Because they what do you mean? I mean, they fought and they conquered and once the Shechina went away, once Hashem is the one who's chayim, Hashem is the one who's like some chayim misa. But at this point, I mean, it could be the base thing would also.
They came in Zion Christ.
Okay, the point is that at that point the Shechina had left the Beis Mikdash and the Jews are fighting for their lives. So at this point, Hashem is not punishing them because he decided that the Churban is going to happen, and it's not like the Jews had the ability to do anything to them at that point. Anyway. So the Chayil then is this area 10 amos wide between the rest of the Harabais and the Azara, which has a special degree of Kedusha.
You're allowed to sit over there?
Yes, you're allowed to sit any place outside the Azara. That's why we also said that the Bata Dinim were by the entrance of the Harabais and by the entrance of the Azara, meaning it was right outside the Azara so that they can sit there. Now, the point is, why were they sitting on Shabbos and Yom Tov? We said they were sitting in the Chayil. Now, why is that? Rashi gives a couple of reasons. First of all, Rashi says because a lot of people come to visit the Beis HaMikdash on Shabbos and Yom Tov. So, therefore, there wouldn't be room in the Lishkas HaGozes for all the people who want to come and ask Shilas, whereas the Chayil is a much bigger open area. Then Rashi says...
Shilas on Shabbos? So about
they could ask Shilas on Shabbos. Sure, they still want to learn Torah.
No, it's not
tardy,
but not...
So Rashi's second explanation is if they're sitting in the Lushkas HaGozes, Rashi prefers a second explanation. If they're sitting in the Lushkas HaGozes, then it makes it look like they're sitting to judge Dinei Torah. And we don't judge Dinei Torah on Shabbos. So because of that, they would sit in the Chayil, not in their normal place, to make it clear we're not sitting now as a Beis Din, we're sitting as the source of Torah for the entire Jewish people, as the teachers of Torah to the entire Jewish people.
They're just there for Paschal.
So they would come to the Lushkas HaGozes. So again, the Lushkas HaGozes, Shom Yerushim Tomer Shashachah, Tomer Shomer Amayim, or Shabbos is V'yom Tev Yerushim B'chayil. Yeah, the Sanhedrin Gzorla, the Gemara mentions, it doesn't mention it over here, but it mentions in other places that the Sanhedrin Gzorla is Shom Yerushim Torah Yotze L'chol Yisrael. Torah goes to the entire Jewish people from then. When we talk about in Pirkei Avos, Moshe Kibbol Torah B'Sinai, or Masorah L'Yeshua, V'Yeshua L'Zkeinim, etc., and then you have the Anshe Knesset HaGdola, and then you have Yosef, and then you have a Shimon HaTzadik, and then Tevin Shesoich. Each of them, it means the Sanhedrin that was headed by that person or by that pair of people. So that's the Sanhedrin Gola. They were the teachers of Torah to the entire Jewish people. So now, that's what we're saying. On Shabbos and Yom Tov, they're still teaching Torah. But they didn't have because they didn't have room in the Lushkas HaGozes. Because you don't want it to look like they're sitting in Dinei Torah, is why they would sit in the Chayil instead. So now Nishalah Shela B'fneim. So now the question would be brought to them. They've gone through all the levels of Bati Din and below that, and nobody could give a solid answer. So now they come to the Sanhedrin Gola. Im Shamu, if they heard from their Rebbeim what the Din is, Amru Bahem, then they would tell them. V'im Lav, and if not, Oim Din L'minyan, then they would stand up and they would go and they would vote. Rabu Amatam in Timu, if the majority said that the thing is Tomei, then they declare it Tomei. Rabu Amatam in Tiaru, and if the majority declared that it's Tahar, then it's Tahar. And that's it, that's the final thing, there's no further appeal from it, and that's what we're saying now. If the Zaken Mamre disagrees with them, then he's going to be Chayav Misa.
Listen, that's only your Paskins,
right? That only your Paskins, right. Now, this is the system, Rabbi Yossi says, that they had because of that. Machloikas wouldn't be long-standing, because any time there was a Machloikas, they would go through, at any point during this whole procedure, they could go to a Beis Din which had the answer, and that's that. They would say, we learned from our Rebbeim, the answer in this case is such and such. But if they didn't, if they went up all the way to the Sanhedrin Gola, they would vote on the spot, and they would decide what the halacha is, and that's it. That's the halacha.
What would they keep for the next day? Everything about it.
Well, no, that's by Dinei Nefashos. If a person has to be executed by Beis Din, they would wait for the next day.
But they would go straight to the 71, or?
No. Most of them would be judged by lower Bata Dinei. Now, on the other hand, Rabbi Yossi continues. Umisharabu Tamide Hillel Shammai Hillel Shlishimshu Kol Tzarkon. Now, what happened was, though, when the number of Talmidim of Shammai and Hillel who did not serve their Rebbeim properly increased, meaning, in other words, you have to have this learning Torah, and then the Shimush Tamar Chachamim, where you actually serve him on a personal level, and you learn from his Midas, and you learn from all kinds of things, from all kinds of unwritten things that you wouldn't learn from him necessarily in a Beis Medrash, but you learn from his Hanhogas, and you learn from everything, so that's considered. It's not just, in other words, that you learn, in other words, there can be those, you learn from him, for example, the Mishnayos and things like that. Shimush Tamar Chachamim includes that you learn from him the methodology, how to learn, how to daush, and all that kind of thing. That's not necessarily taught in the Beis Medrash. You learn it by close proximity to the Talmud Chacham for a long time. That's called Shimush Talmud Chachamim, and the Gemara mentions in some places that that's G'dol Shimush Yosim Limuda, serving a Talmud Chacham is even greater than learning by him. So now, Rabbi Yossi is saying, when you had many Talmidim of Shammai and Hillel, who were not Shimshu Kol Tzorkan, who did not serve their Rebbeim properly, so therefore they didn't fully learn how to learn, Rabu Machloikas B'Yisrael, then at that point Machloikas began proliferating among the Jewish people, Venasas Tertus, Kishtei Tertus, then the Tertus became, made it appear as though it's two Tertus. Because up until that point, now what you had was like this. Originally we're saying there was no long-standing Machloikas at all. The Mishnah mentions in Chagiga, in the times of Yosi ben Ezra and Yosi ben Yochanan, you had the first long-running Machloikas. That Machloikas about the din of Smicha on a Korban on Yom. Do you do it or not? There was a machlokas continued throughout the several generations after that, down to Hillel and Shammai. Hillel and Shammai themselves, it says, argued on three halachas. Besides for that one, they had three other machlokas between them. Bes Shammai and Bes Hillel now, there were, if you look throughout Shas, Bes Shammai and Bes Hillel, you find almost 300 machlokas in between them. So that's what Rabbi Yossi is saying, that now, in that generation, things started to change, and the Torah became almost as though it was two Torahs, because they're not learning Torah as clearly, and they didn't have the ability to resolve their machlokas in so easily. Because they were lacking Shimush Tamar Chachamim. Now, the Rambam makes a very, very important point on this point in his introduction to Pirush HaMishnayos. Does that mean that because they weren't Mishamish Tamar Chachamim, therefore they made mistakes and they were forgetting things, and it means, in other words, maybe they even forgot things that are Halacha L'Moshe Misinai? The Rambam says, absolutely not. Anybody who says that, the Rambam says, Dover Meguna Ma'od, is a very disgraceful thing to say such a thing. V'udivre Misha Emoi Seichel, only somebody who has no Seichel would think such a thing. So the Rambam explains, no. What it means is like this. When it comes to halachos l'moshe misinai, everybody agrees with them. There's no, anytime we know that something is halachos l'moshe misinai, there's never any machlokas about it. What it is though, we know that many halachos are learned from the Yud Gimel Midas, Shatur and Adreshes Bam. That's what the Gemara means over here, says the Rambam. There were things in which each chacham would have his own way of learning using the 13 Midas, and the result was that there were machlokas and that they couldn't resolve. But if they knew that something was halachos l'moshe misinai, then that's it. There's no arguing about it, and nobody ever forgot, or nobody ever was uncertain about any of those things.
They couldn't get close to the Sanhedrin.
So part of the problem was, now the Gemara doesn't mention over here, but part of the problem was that in that time also of Shammai and Hillel, the Romans were starting to interfere with the operations of the Sanhedrin. We even find earlier in the Masechta, for example, there was a period when there were tzedukim in the Sanhedrin, actually, because they were being forced in there, and the Chachamim were not able to sit and learn with the clarity that they had before. In fact, Derdus HaRishonim gives a very interesting explanation of this piece over here. He says what it means is, when we say the Lo Shimshu Kol Tzorkan, it's not talking in the time of Shammai and Hillel. He says it's talking in the generation before that. You had, before Shammai and Hillel became the Nasi and the Abbasidin, you had people were learning, and again, they're learning in different places. They're having to be scattered in different places because of Zerus of the Romans, and of Hudus and whatever. And now, when Shammai and Hillel came along, they gathered the people together. From now on, instead of having hundreds of different ways of learning, you have two. You have Beis Shammai and you have Beis Hillel. So the people who are more on the side of Hillel, as the Alter Rebbe points out, in Geras HaKodesh Yud Gimel, you have people whose neshamas are more from the side of Chesed. They're the kind who are more likely to want to say that something is mutter, if at all possible, and say that we're able to raise it up to Kedusha. Versus you have people whose Neshama is more from the side of Gvura, who are more apt to say that this thing is off limits and you can't be Ma'alei Tikdusha. So they gathered respectively around Hillel and Shammai, whichever one they had more of an affinity to. But the result is, in other words, Bes Shammai and Bes Hillel, he says, is not that now you have two opinions where before you only had one. On the contrary, before that you had dozens of opinions, and now they've managed to get it down to only two. But still, it was Machloikas, where before that, they didn't even have that. Before that, they had the Sanhedrin as the final place to go to, and that's that.
They didn't share, like, Mishnayos, like in the
They had some kind of Mishnayos, but the Mishnayos were they were the core of what we now have as the Mishnah. But still, it wasn't fixed. Everybody learned it in their own. Everybody learned it in their own style, which is why we eventually have some Mishnah to Meir. And they argued on different things. Here we had in the whole previous sugya, we had many machlokas that are based on how to darsh and psukim respectively.
Yeah.
What Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi did with the Mishnah is he gathered together all the different opinions that existed in his time, and he decided between them which one is going to be the final halacha. He and his Beis Din, we don't mean him by himself, we don't mean just sitting down there in an office, we mean he's working it out together with the Beis Din of his times. In each case, Rabbi Meir says this, Rabbi Yehuda says that, Rabbi Yossi says this. How should we record it in the Mishnah, and how should we record it in a way to establish what the halacha is?
Before then, there was no, like, official...
Before then, there was no single text of Mishnah. Every Tana would teach Mishnah in his own style.
These are just talking about the Midrashim, like
how... Yeah, different Batei Midrash, yeah.
So he differentiated between the Mishnahs and the Braises?
So Rebbe composed the Mishnah as we had, not composed, he compiled the Mishnah as we have it. He took the various versions of the Mishnayos that were floating around in the different Batei Medrash. For the most part, he picked Rebbe Meir's version of the Mishnayos because it was the clearest and the most succinct and made it the basis of all the Mishnayos as we have it.
And the rest became Braises.
The rest became Braises, yes. Yeah. Continues the Gemara. Mishum, from there, from the Sanhedrin of Gerla, they would keep an eye on, again, you have to have Bote Dinim all over Eretz Yisrael. How would they determine who's suitable, who should be appointed to the Bote Dinim? Kursvin v'shochen v'chol mekoymus. They would send letters, the Beis Din HaGadol would be sending letters, throughout Eretz Yisrael. Kol Mishu Chocham, anybody who's wise in knowledge of Torah, that's the first prerequisite for a person to be a member of the Sanhedrin. The Gemara, in fact, pointed out in the first perek of Ar Masechta, you could have a person who has tremendous great midas and all kinds of other things, but he's not a Talmid Chocham. There's a specific one of the 613 mitzvahs. Do not appoint such a person as a dayan. He's a great Baal midas and a Baal tzedakah and this and that and whatever, but he doesn't know knowledge of Torah. Nothing doing. So first of all, he has to be Chocham. The Shfal Ushfal Berech, he has to be of low knees, meaning, in other words, that he's humble. He's ready to bow in humility in front of other people. The das abrias noicha himenu, and people get along with him. He has good midas, and therefore people appreciate and unlike him. Such a person has the qualities, yehei dayan ve'iroi. He should be a dayan in his city. So they would write to the city, if you know of such a person in town, make sure that you appoint him one of your local dayanim. Marsha points out he has to be shval berach, he has to be humble, because that's an important prerequisite also for a dayan. That's like we have in Pirkei Avos, ma'od ma'od, have a shval ruach, a person has to be very, very humble, so therefore that's an extremely important midah. So such a person would be appointed a dayan in his city. Mishum malvanoisa laharabais. Eventually, he could be promoted from there to the Beis Din by the entrance of the harabais. Mishum laazora. From there, he could be promoted to the next higher Beis Din, the one by the entrance of the azora. Mishum the lishkas agozis, and from there, he would be promoted to the lishkas agozis. So in other words, like you imagine, for example, all the chachamim that we know of. Let's say, for example, Hillel came from Bavel and was immediately appointed Nasi. That's a bit of an unusual thing. But let's say, for example, Shammai lived his whole life in Eretz Yisrael. So you can imagine, years before that, he had been a dayan in his local city, wherever he lived. Then eventually he was promoted from one stage to another, and eventually he wound up in the Lushkas HaGadlis. But Derech Klal, a person would go through these stages. Lahavdo, you have, the same way a person doesn't just come out of nowhere and become president, but Derech Klal, a person goes through. First he's a mayor, and he's a governor, and he's a this, and a that, and whatever, and over the years
So how does he appoint to the 71?
So he would be appointed. So then eventually when there was a vacancy, one of the Chachamim would pass away or otherwise leave for whatever reason, then they have to appoint. There was a vacancy. So that's the thing. So they would constantly be keeping track of who's on different levels of learning and who's on different levels of midas. Yeah. So the Gemara mentions in this connection, since we mentioned these good midas that a person should have, Shochu Mitam, they sent from there a message from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, Ezehu Ben Ha'olam Abba, who is a person who is Ben Ha'olam Abba. Now, Ko Yisrael, Yashar Chayuk Olam Abba, as we're going to learn in a couple of blocks, but you have certain people who are Ben Ha'olam Abba, like, in other words, they go straight to Gan Eden without needing Gehenim, without needing... So what's a person who's a Ben Ha'olam Abba? So they sent a message as follows. In the sun, where a person is humble, Ushfal Berach, and with his knees bent, in other words, again, well, another expression of humble, of humility. The Shayef oil Shayef Benafik, he bends down when he comes in and he goes in, and he bends it down when he goes out, which is also a way of humility, like he doesn't stand himself high and proud, which the Gemara elsewhere mentions is not a good thing to do. So the goddess Vaudaita Tadira, he's constantly learning Torah, and he doesn't hold any credit for himself. He doesn't consider himself that I deserve credit for my learning and for my Maisim Torah and everything. So here's where Marshall points out that you have the highest of all middos is to be humble, ma'od ma'od evishvalruach, and gaiva on the other hand is the worst of all middos. So now we're mentioning why all these expressions of humility. So Marshall explains, because you can have a person who's a balgaiva about his seichel, then you can have a person who's a balgaiva about his physical strength, and then you can have a balgaiva who's a balgaiva because of his riches. So now we're saying all these three things over here, Inverson, Shal Berach, Shaif Oil, Shaif Nafik, each of them represents that he doesn't consider himself a balgaiva in any of these areas. He's a chochma, but he's not proud of his chochma. He's strong, but he's not proud of his glory. He's rich, but he's not proud of his riches. All of those, he gives the credit to Hashem. And then in addition, also, he's learning Torah constantly. And then he might say to himself, listen, I was already Yotze with Kviyas Itim LaTorah, so now I'm learning more than that. I deserve credit from Hashem. But he doesn't take credit. He just learns constantly without expecting any kind of credit. So that's the kind of person. There's a Ben Olam Haba. The Gemara says, when they received this message in Babel, Yahweh Rabbanan, Einehen, Rab Ula Ba'aba, the Chachamim gave a look over to Rab Ula Ba'aba, because they realized he has all these qualities. You want to see a description in the flesh of a Ben Olam Haba, look at him and you'll see what this is talking about.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. The Mishnah had said about the Zokin Mamre, Chozer Le'ira Vishana, that if he went back to his city and he taught the way he was teaching before, then that doesn't make him a Zokin Mamre yet, only if he paskins practical halacha. So the Gemara says, Tanan Rabbanan, Eina Chayev Atri Yasek Hora Asay, he's Chayev only if he himself follows his own teaching, or he teaches other people, paskins to other people, and they follow his psak din.
Is that privately the problem? If he does it privately?
That's what we're going to say. Bishlema Yodalachinam Yasukoda Asay. So we can understand why if he teaches other people and they do like he taught them, fine, we can understand. Ikra Labak Tolahu. Until now, he wasn't Chayev Misa, because he had every right to be teaching them the halacha this way. Now, when he teaches them and he tells them to do the way he was until now, and that was then the Sanhedrin Gola told him, you're not supposed to do that, and he does, then we can understand why he's Chayav Nisa. What's wrong if he himself paskins his own, if he paskins according to his own halacha? Isn't he, wouldn't he be Chayav Nisa anyway if he was over on one of the things that makes him Chayav Nisa based in? Then he's anyway Chayav Nisa. So the Gemara says, Hatenach hechad ori b'chelav adam. Now, fine, it's easy enough to understand, let's say, till now, his psak halacha was about, let's say, chelav and dam. He held a certain kind of thing as mutter, and now the Sanhedrin had told him, no, this type of chelav is osur. So fine, you can understand. So the me'ikra labak tolahu, he wasn't chayv mister in the first place, because chelav and dam are not things that involve missus based, and it's only kar. Now, as a result of being a Zokin Mamre, then now he becomes Chayav Misa. What if his original psak had been something which involves Misas Beistin? If until now he was doing that, wouldn't he have been Chayav Misa until now? Let's say, for example, he was arguing that a certain Malacha is Mutter on Shabbos. And they came and told him that, no, this thing is also as one of the Malachas. Till now he was doing it. Then he's already Chayav Misa. What do you mean he has to first go back to his city and do it, and then he's Chayav Misa? The answer is Me'ikra Boy Hasra. The difference is originally he would have needed Hasra in order to be Chayav Misa. Hashta loy boy asra. Now, as a result of being meikra boy asra, hashta loy boy asra. Now he does not require hasra, because once the Sanhedrin Gerla told him this is what the halacha is, then he disobeyed, then that's it. He's chayiv misa, and no further hasra is needed. The fact that the Beiskin told him differently is already all by itself a hasra. So as Mar says, Mesis to Loiboy Astra Mayikla Meimar. What about the case of a Mesis? We learned earlier in the Masechta that a Mesis does not require Hasura. We talked earlier, we do have the word Rishonim who learned that when the Gemara says over there that a Mesis, this was actually in Shlosha Prakim of Rambam today or yesterday, but a Mesis comes to somebody and says, let's worship Avodah Zarah. We said the person tells him, how could we abandon Hashem and worship useless Avodah Zarah? And then the other guy says, I don't care. This is the important thing. We have to do it this way. Then he's Chayiv Misa. Does that mean that statement to him, how could we do this, is what's necessary as a minimum Hasura, or is it that it's not really a Hasura? It's basically that's needed in order to prompt the Edom to pay attention, to realize the Edom who are hiding behind a fence over there to know that he's going to be Mesis over here.
What officially is it?
So that's Machlokas showing him what exactly it is. But the point is, you don't need to tell him in so many words, don't be Mesis. If you do, you're going to be Chayiv Misa. You don't need that. A Mesis does not require that. So now what happens is suppose that this Zaken was telling other people a Loshen, which he was arguing is not considered Mesis, it's not considered telling them to worship Avodah Zarah, but the Sanhedrin Gdola says it is. That this Loshen that you've been using actually amounts to telling them to worship Avodah Zarah. So now, he was Chayiv Misa before, and he's Chayiv Misa now, and you don't need Hasura, so what's the difference between before being a Zaken Mamre and not now? The answer is Me'ikra, I Oma Taimim, a Kablin Mine. The difference is before, at least if he found a reason to argue that what I said is not considered to be Mesis, Me'kablin Mine, then we could accept it, and then so this local Basin would not yet be Mechayiv and Misa, because even if Adam come and say, he said such and such to us, and he could argue in his defense, the Loshen that I said to them is not a Loshen that would be considered Hasasa, and therefore I'm not a Mesis. So fine, he's not Chayiv Misa yet. Hashri, Yom HaTaimah, let me come to Mine. But now, after the Sanhedrin Gola told him, no, this Loshen that you've been using is considered and does make you considered a Mesis. And now, don't do it anymore. If he now goes back to town and starts doing it again, then he can be judged as a Zaken Mamre. He's going to say, but I have an argument that it's not. Tough luck. The Sanhedrin Gola said that what you said is not, you can't be saying that anymore, and you continue to say it, therefore you're now a Mesis. You don't need an Asura, and therefore that's it. Then
Mesis makes a step further. That
so in other words, the point is that before he was a Mesis, he didn't need Asura. But now on top of that, not only does he need Asura, but we're not going to accept any argument from him to say, yeah, but what I said is not Asura, because the Sanhedrin Gdola told him differently. And therefore, now he will be judged as a Zaken Mamre, and as the following Mishnayos are going to give the two Mishnayos from now, later on Petesim and Aleph, which we'll learn tomorrow, but Hashem discusses that they bring him to the Sanhedrin Gdola, and they were the ones who judge him and convict him.
Because Mesis over here taking this big Tavach Chacham, we would stigma now and make him look a different person completely.
No, so that's the thing. We're not talking a blatant Mesis where he says, for example, let's go worship Avodah Zarah. Obviously, that's a Mesis, no question about that. Right. But he's saying some kind of Loshen, some kind of equivocal Loshen, which he's arguing it doesn't really make me a Mesis. So I don't know, let's say for example, I can't picture exactly what the Loshen would be, but whatever, he says to them some kind of Loshen, which according to him doesn't amount to actually telling them, let's go worship Avodah Zarah, and the Sanhedrin is telling them that nevertheless is still in the category of Mesis. Here, I guess, you know what, you have like this, with you in the Masechta, we actually had a discussion about it between the Amoraim, what happens if he says, for example, Eilech ve'Evod, I will go and worship Avodah Zarah. Does that amount to being a Mesis or not? On the one hand, he's saying, I will go, so that maybe just means only me, not you. But maybe it means, I'll go, and why don't you come along with me? So is that considered a Mesis or not? So they could be arguing, let's say he says a Loshen like that, for example, would that make him a Mesis? So he might be saying that all this time, and every time they bring him to the local basin, every time Adam come and say, he said Eilech ve'Evod, he says, yeah, but that's not Hasasa, Hasasa would only be if I said Melech ve'Evod. They finally go to the basin Agadol, and the basin Agadol says, sorry, if you say Eilech ve'Evod, is also considered a Mesis. Now, if he goes back home and says Eilech ve'Evod, so now we're not going to accept any further excuses from him.
Either way, I'm saying Shmichamis on him. He's done anything.
No, because the fact that he says Eilech ve'Evod, we said before, only if he actually goes and then worships Avodah Zarah, actually accepts it as a god or something like that, and here we didn't necessarily do that, but yeah.